This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This year's campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination can be very personal. Each of us has to confront our beliefs about sex, race, and power. One week from today, we'll be at Morgan State University in Baltimore to talk about African Americans' sometimes conflicted feelings about Senator Barack Obama and the prospect of a first black president. Today, we address the range of responses women talk about when they consider Senator Hillary Clinton and the possibility of a first female president. We'll talk with some of the contributors to a new book, 30 Ways of Looking at Hillary, Reflections by Women Writers, and we invite women in the audience to call us with their views. Do you make your decisions out of loyalty on the issues? Does personality play a part? And how much does Senator Clinton's baggage figure in? The Lewinsky affair, the line about baking cookies, the perception that she's aloof and calculating, and her style. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Susan Morrison, articles editor at The New Yorker magazine and editor of 30 Ways of Looking at Hillary. She joins us from our bureau in New York, and it's nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And as women look at this choice, why isn't it simple?
Well, there are more than 30 ways, I can tell you. Sometime last spring, I started realizing that every time a conversation that I was in got around to Hillary Clinton, suddenly voices were raised, faces got red, people just got much more exercised about her. People have conversations about her that they would never have about Mitt Romney or John Edwards. And, I realized that this was particularly true among women. Hillary herself has said over the years, that she's a Rorschach test. And so I just decided to take that concept, Hillary as Rorschach test, and basically, ask 30 women to, as it were, submit themselves to the Hillary Rorschach test and write about what kinds of buttons she pushes in them, where their reactions toward her come from. And the results were really quite interesting. A number of the women started out being what Nora Ephron has memorably called Hillary resistors, people who wanted to like Hillary but for one reason or another felt that they were having trouble liking her. And it was just really interesting to see these women kind of put their reactions to her under the microscope, poke at them, prod them, and figure out which ones are valid and which ones are not.
In your introduction, you write, where one person sees a carpetbagger, another sees a deft politician. Where one sees a humiliated and long-suffering wife, another sees a dignified first lady. So a lot of this depends on where you're standing when you're looking.
Right. At first, I thought that some of the passion about Hillary might have to do with the fact that we had already lived with her in the public eye for so many years, that she'd already lived in the White House for 8 years. We know more about her than we should because of the Starr report and all kinds of other things that went on during the Clinton administration. But I think it's more than that. I think it's because she's a woman, and so many women, at least in my generation and the baby boomer generation, identified with her for so long, and particularly at the beginning, that then when the disappointments inevitably came along, people took them extremely personally. I think we perhaps expected more of her. Maybe we expect more of a woman than we do of a man in general. And somehow the disappointments hurt more keenly.
Susan Morrison, editor of the new book, 30 Ways of Looking at Hillary. Again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And let's start out with Amy. Amy calling us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I was calling because I had a comment about Hillary Clinton. I'm compelled to vote for her as a woman voter. I want to have a female president. But I have reservations about voting for Hillary because sometimes in the public eye, she comes off as so hard and so cold. And I feel conflicted about that because sometimes I feel like the media jumps on her when she shows emotion.
Yes, indeed. For example, a couple of weeks ago, just before the New Hampshire primary, there was that now famous emotional moment. Let's listen.
It's not easy. It's not easy. And I couldn't do it if I just didn't, passionately believe it was the right thing to do. I have so many opportunities from this country. I just don't want to see us fall backwards.
And Amy, I wonder if you saw or heard that before and how you responded to it.
I did. And actually, for me, that's more of the Hillary Clinton that I would like to see, because it shows so much her human side. And so many times I feel like she's almost mechanical.
And I have to say that Susan Morrison, a lot of your writers address that very question, the fear that she's cold.
Yes. Well, a lot of the writers, Deborah Tannen in particular, list the adjectives that are routinely used to describe Hillary: cold, calculating, aloof. And as Deborah points out in her essay, well, would anybody ever call Rudy Giuliani cold? Would anyone think to call John McCain calculating? These just aren't really adjectives that you routinely hear applied to men in a pejorative way. And it sort of underscores how we do have different expectations from what we want a woman to be. One of the things that I think floats to the top when you have read all 30 of these essays is that there still seems to be quite a bit of national confusion about what we expect from a woman leader. One of the things that I thought was so interesting about New Hampshire is that after Iowa, basically all the media and all the pundits had just said, Hillary sunk, this is it. And then even after the so-called crying moment, there was almost an instant consensus that, oh, my God, she's finished. This is terrible.
Yeah, can't cry in a campaign.
When, in fact, yeah, everyone kept saying it was her musky moment and that it was over. But, in fact, what happened is that voters, particularly women, really rallied around her, and you know, she won the primary with a huge boost from women. I think that women and men like to see that she's human. But it is interesting that it is a criticism that we rarely make of male candidates. We rarely say, "Oh, I wish we saw them be warmer and fuzzier." But somehow, because she's a woman, we want to see that.
The Muskie reference to former Senator Ed Muskie and presidential contender who may or may not have cried and lost apparently the nomination, or at least that's the perception. Because of that, she was not referring to a freshwater fish. In any case, Amy, do you plan to vote for Senator Clinton?
I am still undecided. I'm very, very torn, but I've been enjoying listening to all of the NPR coverage on the election. So I don't know if I'm going to make up my mind before I actually head into the voting booth.
Well, have a good time. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here to share her views on Hillary is Dahlia Lithwick, the senior legal correspondent and senior editor at the online magazine Slate.com, also legal correspondent for NPR's Day to Day. She joins us from member station WCVE in Richmond, Virginia. And it's nice to talk with you again.
Hi, Neil.
And I'm just curious about the title of your essay, Can You Forgive Her? What are you talking about?
Well, I should bracket what I'm about to say by saying that probably Susan should speak to the titles, because I don't think I'm in charge of that. So if I want to, Susan, should I just spike it to you right now?
Well, I'll tell you very quickly. When I was putting the final touches on this collection, I made an effort to let the title make sure that the titles differentiated each essay from the rest as much as possible. And I thought that the gist of Dahlia's was, you know, there are all of these things that bug us about Hillary. Let's figure out if they make sense or not. Can we forgive her for it? Well, now we should bounce it back to Dahlia so she can sum up her essay for you.
Okay. This is that female spirit of collaboration and working together,
right.
Neil.
And blaming the editor for writing the headline.
No, I just didn't want to massively misrepresent. I mean, I think that what I was struggling with, and I think Susan sort of laid it out, is this sort of head-heart problem that I have and that a lot of women have. You know, I desperately want to be more excited about this candidate. You know, I want my children to have had a woman president, and her resume, you know, is everything and more that one could ask for. And yet I just can't warm to her. And, you know, as I sort of tried to unpack what it is that I can't forgive in Hillary, it's a lot of this very, very gendery, weird, Freudian, psychosocial stuff that I think women can't forgive in themselves. And so, you know, a lot of the things that I laid out in my chapter are, you know, can we not forgive her because she reminds of our mothers? Can we not forgive her because, you know, she stood by Bill and looked like a victim after Lewinsky Gate? Can we not forgive her because she reminds us of the sort of mommy wars that, you know, the wars that are going on where women in this country are setting each other's hair on fire over this question of going to work or staying at home? And I think as a template for all of that anxiety that we have about ourselves, are we good enough? Are we faking it in a man's world? You know, I describe running around with a Cheerio in my hair, which is in fact true, and, you know, trying to pretend I'm a real serious journalist. We don't see any of that messiness in her. And I think sort of the arc of my chapter was meant to be women like the messiness. I think we want to know. It's not just that moment in New Hampshire where she teared up and it let us know she was authentic. We like the sort of Lifetime television for women's story about, you know, I was wronged, I scrabbled back, here I am, I'm at the top of the heap. And we really haven't seen that messiness in Hillary. And that's one of the things I think we can't forgive her.
Well, some women. You write in your essay, I've yet to encounter a woman who adores candidate Clinton, who wants to staff phone banks and wear T-shirts for her. Tepid endorsements, yes. Moderate heebie-jeebies, yes. But passion, devotion, strong personal identification, never. And yet there are plenty of women in her headquarters wearing those T-shirts and just as passionate, but maybe not the women you're talking to.
Well, I think that, and, you know, remembering that I wrote that, you know, my sort of essay several months ago. So I think it was probably before this campaign had really, really started to heat up. But yeah, you know, my experiences with young mothers, young professional women, I think there's an enormous disjunction between, you know, one generation of feminists and the next on Hillary Clinton. And I think that young women, you know, who have toddlers like I do, don't see ourselves in her quite as much as the generation of feminists before us. I think that that incredibly strong essay that Gloria Steinem wrote a few weeks ago in the New York Times, essentially sort of admonishing women to get behind Hillary, just didn't resonate with women who are, you know, of a younger sort of, let's say, the next wave of feminists.
And Susan Morrison, let me put this to you. You do hear from some African-Americans that not to vote for Barack Obama, well, that's meaning you're a traitor to your race. Do you hear from anybody not to vote for Hillary Clinton as being a traitor to your sex?
Well, actually, one thing that I feel like we're hearing a little bit more of as the campaign goes on is, well, in Katha Politz's essay, as she put it this way, she said she's never been a big Hillary fan, but she says, if people keep saying these horrible, insulting, sexist things about Hillary Clinton, I may just have to vote for her. And I think that as the campaign goes on and Hillary absorbs more and more flack and sexism and, you know, negative comments, I think that there is this kind of inexorable sense of women rallying around her, women who were never hugely enthusiastic about her. And I think that might go on and on. But to refer back to the Gloria Steinem op-ed piece that Dahlia just mentioned, I actually found that quite powerful. I mean, I am maybe half a generation or maybe a whole generation older than Dahlia, but, you know, Steinem made the point that she said, listen, African American men had the vote 50 years before women had the vote in this country. It's just crazy to act as if women have already completely arrived. I mean, if that were the case, where have been all the other, you know, near-miss female presidential candidates? There's just no denying that it will be a huge thing for us to have either a woman president or an African-American president. And it's, I don't think it's terribly productive to debate over which is the cooler thing. I mean, both of them are amazing. And the fact that we have two candidates, these two breakthroughs, you know, potentially happening, is just great. I mean, it's great for our country, and it's going to be a fascinating election to watch.
Susan Morrison, editor of the new book, 30 Ways of Looking at Hillary, and one of her contributors, Dahlia Lithwick. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Elizabeth is on the line. Elizabeth calling from Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes, I think my feeling, like so many others, are ambivalent because on one hand, she does come across as this very strong female that you admire. You're in sympathy with her, especially with all the excoriation she has taken over the past 16 years. And then there are other times she comes out as this, you know, very vulnerable person, a vulnerable female, and that's okay. I think part of our problem is we're trying to put everybody into these neat little boxes. And I want to comment on the statement that was just made. While African-American men may have had the vote 50 years before women, let us not even try to fool ourselves and think that African American males especially have had it any easier than white women. That is just not so in corporate America. You know, the white female has always been given the benefit of the doubt over the black male. So I think we all need to just step back and, you know, let the facts play out for themselves and look at the issues and then maybe try not to vote just strictly on personality. But as human beings, we all do that. I know that.
Mm-hmm. We earlier played that famous clip of Senator Clinton in New Hampshire having that emotional moment. But lately, she's also been showing her fangs a bit. Here's an attack ad that's been running in South Carolina.
Listen to Barack Obama last week talking about Republicans.
The Republicans were the party of ideas for a pretty long chunk of time there over the last 10, 15 years.
Really? Aren't those the ideas that got us into the economic mess we're in today? Ideas like special tax breaks for Wall Street, running up a $9 trillion debt, refusing to raise the minimum wage or deal with the housing crisis. Are those the ideas Barack Obama's talking about?
Elizabeth, I wonder how messages like that change or don't change your opinion of Senator Clinton.
It turns me off. I voted for Bill Clinton. I've always said if he had to run again, yes, I'll vote for him. And I guess he is running again, and I will not vote for him because I think it is going overboard. I think every news outlet have done fact-checked in terms of the statement and other statements, and they are distorting. And the last thing we want is to sort of replicate the Karl Rove style. And I just think it's turning off too many people.
Dahlia Lithwick, let me ask you, how would that kind of performance figure in to your analysis?
I think that this goes back to something Susan said at the very beginning that's so important, the sort of Deborah Tannen point about language. I think not only is there a sort of very, very, very crabbed universe in which women can operate without getting called shrill and, strident and all those words, as Susan said, that you're not allowed to use about men. I think it goes the other way, which is there's a very narrow bandwidth in which they can sort of speak politically without looking like they've run afoul of some, you know, invisible goal that we don't know where it is. And so I think that whereas men can talk to each other the way Obama and Clinton talked to each other in the Monday debate without raising all these questions of, you know, is this too much? Is it over the line? Women still can't do that.
Elizabeth, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we're going to continue our conversation on the other side of the break, so stay with us. We're talking with Susan Morrison, the editor of the new book, 30 Ways of Looking at Hillary. Also with us, Dahlia Lithwick, one of her contributors. Robin Givhan, who also contributed to the essays, will join us when we return. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're talking about women and Hillary Rodham Clinton. If you'd like to read the introduction to the book, 30 Ways of Looking at Hillary, you can find it at our website, npr.org/talk. Our guests are Dahlia Lithwick, who's one of the contributors to the book, and Susan Morrison, editor of the book, 30 Ways of Looking at Hillary. Style is one more issue that follows Hillary Clinton around during her campaign, from her infamous headband in the early days to Cleavage Gate. Joining us now is Robin Givhan, fashion editor for The Washington Post and winner of the 2006 Pulitzer Prize for Criticism. Robin is also with us from our bureau in New York. Nice to speak with you again.
Nice to be here.
And you write in your essay, modern women like to pretend that style doesn't matter anymore, that feminism and modernity have shattered the old notion that there was a value in a woman being able to look effortlessly chic. Why does style matter?
Well, I think style matters because we're clearly a very visual culture, and we often only have moments to make to form an opinion about someone. And I think style is a shorthand. It's a way that we have of summing someone up, figuring out what tribe they belong to, figuring out how they perhaps think of themselves. And I think it's also a way of making connections with people.
It's also a lightning rod. When you reported on the fact that Senator Clinton was wearing an outfit that showed a little bit of cleavage as compared to her normal black pantsuit, that provoked quite a response, not just from Senator Clinton's campaign, but from a lot of readers to The Washington Post as well.
Indeed, it did. And, you know, I was surprised by that reaction, quite honestly, in part because I thought that in many ways, much of what I was saying was something that most people noticed and perhaps were commenting on or thinking about themselves. And the fact was that she was wearing something that was very much out of character for her. I mean, she's known as someone who is very buttoned up. You know, I thought about back to her days as First Lady and the choices that she made when she was essentially in the position of being this representative of American femininity, for lack of a better way of describing the First Lady's ceremonial role. Mm. And here was something that was very surprising for the person who was wearing it as well as for the location. And I think it said something about her comfort level with her personal presentation. And the reaction, I think, clearly said something about the way that we view women.
Well, let's get some callers in on the conversation again. Again, the number is 800-989-8255. You can also send us an email, talk@npr.org. Let's turn next to Dexter. Dexter with us from Dothan, Alabama.
Hi. I was wondering if any of the women had commented or mentioned the comparison between Hillary Clinton, whom I have a lot of respect for, as I also did for Jacqueline Onassis, and how Mrs. Onassis couldn't take a breath without everyone adoring the breath. Hillary seems to be able to utter a syllable, and a huge percentage of people are driven in the opposite direction. It's just a very interesting contrast in style in a kind of overall sense.
Hmm. You write in your piece, Robin Gavan, that particularly baby boomer women admire not just Hillary Clinton, but Audrey Hepburn, and Jacqueline Kennedy, as our caller Dexter suggests.
Yeah, one of the things I do think is sort of fascinating is that as much as modern or contemporary women try to poo-poo the notion that fashion or style, more specifically, is in any way important, when they look back on women like that, I think they do help. Part of what helps to form their opinion is the style that those women projected. And in many ways, it wasn't even so much about a particular garment or wearing a particular designer or being trendy. It was simply the way that they presented themselves, which seemed to speak of confidence and a kind of authenticity that I think they saw in their attire. I think they really believed that what they were seeing in those clothes and what they were seeing in their style was a reflection of who they were as a person.
And you write, and thank you, Dexter, for the phone call. You write that Hillary Clinton still hasn't become what we crave, even need, an icon of female power. We want her to tell us, define for us, what female power looks like at the highest level.
Yeah, I think in a really basic way, when we look at her, we are trying to envision her in the role of commander-in-chief, and there's really not there's not a template for that. We don't really know what a woman, an American woman, looks like in that role. And so I do think that part of what we sort of struggle with is just kind of filling in the blanks, you know, trying to actually get that image in our head. And part of that involves, well, what is that person wearing? We know what a man looks like in that role, but And the other thing, too, I think, is that in many ways, Hillary has played out in a very public way the struggles that a lot of women have in dealing with the fashion industry, in dealing with their own personal style, in kind of negotiating this tension between actually secretly enjoying fashion and somehow feeling that admitting to it is going to lessen their intelligence or lessen the authority that they have.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Irma. Irma with us from Chattanooga in Tennessee.
Hi. Yes, I was calling because I just wanted to give my opinion about I appreciate everything that everyone has said, and it helps me understand a little better. But I think I'm driven to vote for Hillary or to admire her because of her strength.
Because of her strength.
Yeah, she's a very strong individual, and in our women's world, it's so very difficult. You know, it's an uphill battle everywhere, at work, anywhere you are, and
And she didn't even shed a tear that time, but, you know, it was nice to see that she has emotion. But some of us are just plain old, we cry every time somebody, because it's so difficult for us. And a lot of people don't understand that, that we're out there working, raising a family, doing it all. And we also have to be, we have to be strong. And I believe that, that her strength is what I admire in her.
Dahlia Lithwick, I wanted to ask you about that. You talked about the dichotomy. Yes, you want her to be strong, but yes, you want the feminine side too.
Right. It's almost impossible to sort of negotiate both those things at the same time. I sort of somewhere in my essay say, you know, we want her to be baking cookies and, you know, commander-in-chief at the same time, and nothing less will satisfy us. And I do think, you know, it is interesting, just going back to what Robin's saying about fashion, I think it's worth at least throwing out there. The one of the big contrasts I would see between someone like Jackie Kennedy, who is sort of a fashion icon, and Hillary, and I think Robin makes this point in her essay, is that Hillary keeps changing, and that there's this sense that, you know, these four or five distinct sort of periods. And I think that that really starts to smoke out an anxiety that we have of why is this woman really reinventing herself every little while, and why does that, or in which ways does that mirror the way she's doing so politically? So I think there's a weird fondness for Jackie Kennedy, because you have a sense that even if she was out milking cows or regrouting the shower, she would have one of those cute little hats on, and that makes us feel like here's a person who's comfortable in her own skin. Hillary's much more, I think, elusive, and I think that Robin's right, that that's because she's kind of trying to figure it out as she goes along. But I think it does make us feel a little bit nervous about who the there is in there.
Thanks very much, Irma.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry.
Well, Neil, I was just going to say that I think to a great degree, a lot of it has to do with authenticity. And one of the things that fashion sort of helps to illustrate is a certain degree of authenticity. I mean, people make choices about, you know, how they want to be perceived. And if you're sort of constantly shifting from one look to a completely different look to yet another look, there you do come across as someone who hasn't yet figured out, well, who am I really? And when people talk about style, one of the things that they say is that women, or even men who have had great style, have been people whose appearance really reflects who they are, and they feel very comfortable maintaining that specific style over the course of many years. They're not changing with the whim.
Let's get JP on the line. JP calling from Vineta, Oregon.
Well, hi.
Hi.
I like this. I wanted to point out that Hillary Clinton's moment of emotion came the day after the debate. And John Edwards said, hey, this isn't political, this is personal. And that's exactly what Hillary said the next day. I am a boomer, and so I know Hillary is a groundbreaker. You know, she was one of the first to go to law school and things in numbers. And so I hold her to a higher standard.
Is that fair?
No. No, but I do hear all of the words, not as sexist words. What people describe her as, a calculating person. Well, isn't that what we want to negotiate for our country? So calculating is not a bad thing.
And ambition, well, if you're not ambitious, you're not going to run for president of the United States.
You're here. There you go. There it is. Those people that make it this far are those kind of people.
And I think it was Jane Cramer in her essay, Susan Morrison, who talked about this this thing of holding women to higher standards.
Yes, Jane has some wonderful bits in her essay. She says, you know, the question I have for Barack Obama is just, can he do the job? The question I have for Hillary Clinton is, why does she want the job? What kind of woman does that make her? Mm. You know, and she goes on to say that she takes Hillary personally. She takes her seriously, more seriously, really, than she would ever dream of taking a male candidate.
Yes.
And I think that is because we can relate to her in so many ways. I mean, at least us baby boomers, she reminds us of certain things in ourselves. I think that's one of the reasons we judge her more harshly and we expect more of her. But, you know, this is why the exercise of working on and reading this book, I think, is very interesting, because it helps you kind of hash out. It's helped me anyway, kind of hash out which of my reactions I think are legit and which of my reactions I think are are sort of psycho-nonsense.
I also want her pulled together, though. You know, they were talking about fashion, and we want to see messiness. That may be for the youngins, but we know that this is business, and we want her looking like a professional businesswoman. But the other deal is, when she was first lady, within the first little chunk that she was first lady, she got together the medical people, none of who she was going to tell us who they were, and slammed the door. She actually showed Dick Cheney how to negotiate, you know, to work the energy deal.
Yeah, his got through, though. Yeah.
Excuse me?
His got through.
Well, he slammed the door harder than she did, and everybody pointed out her errors. Nobody pointed out Dick's errors, even though they saw them.
I think they've been busy doing that ever since. But anyway, Vanita, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. Bye-bye. We're talking about a new book, 30 Ways of Looking at Hillary. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email from Jane in Oklahoma City. As a 58-year-old woman professional, I think I understand Hillary. You don't get to her level in her chosen profession by being a mouse. Power becomes her. Sticking with her man when wronged shows she is savvy enough to use him to her own advantage. My vote will be hers. Let's see if we can get another caller in. Rona's with us. Rona calling from Marble Canyon in Arizona.
Hi. Gee whiz, you know, Ginger Rogers did everything Fred Astaire did. And she did it backwards in high heels. I think it's really dumb of women to hold Hillary to a so-called higher standard. How high can you go? She's done everything to the maximum, better than most anybody, men and women, putting everything into, you know, putting a mind to it. And if people, we've had a number of mindless presidents, most recently, with no intellectual depth. I think that the problem is with women themselves.
What do you think, Dahlia Lithwick?
I think that that's a great point, and I think, I guess Jane made it just before. I think that at the core of some of the most interesting essays in this book, women have a huge problem with power, and they have a huge problem with women who seek power and who do it sort of brazenly and boldly. You know, one of the things that I think is so interesting is the extent to which women are very comfortable with the narrative that goes, you know, Nancy Pelosi's story, I was called to this job. I, you know, I'm kicking and screaming, but I had to do it. I made a deathbed promise to someone. Laura Bush's, you know, I still hate giving speeches. I really would be much happier reading a book. That's a narrative women are comfortable with, women who sort of been as Bhutto, you know, well, I just happened to fall into this and whoops, you know, now I'm powerful. That's much easier, I think, for women. Hillary stands for something very different. This is a woman who, you know, from her days in college just went for it. And I think several of the callers have sort of made the point that that makes women very, very uncomfortable. And really some of the most intriguing essays in the book are trying to explore what is it about just absolute bare-knuckled ambition that makes women so anxious.
On that point, here's an email we got from another Jane, this one in Tucson, Arizona. I'm a dedicated Democrat and a feminist and very much against Hillary. If elected, I fear she will be so unpopular as to set back the progress of all female politicians. She and Bill will stop at nothing to achieve their ambitions, as they've proved this week with smears against Obama. While I'm anxious to elect our first female president, I do not believe she is the one. And Susan Morrison, there's an aspect of that in some of your contributions as well.
Well, it is interesting. A handful of the women say, look, Lionel Shriver, for instance, says it's an anti-feminist story for the nation's first female presidential candidate to have gotten where she is on her husband's coattails. That's just depressing. In the introduction, I quote the late Wendy Wasserstein, who was originally a huge Hillary supporter and then was completely dismayed to find that after the Lewinsky scandal, that's when Hillary's popularity really soared. Like, what does it mean for our country that we can only really love and admire and back a woman when we see her as a downtrodden victim? On the other hand, I think that, you know, hang on, I just lost my train of thought. What was the What was the...
Well, it was at the fear that her unpopularity would make it difficult for any other woman politician to follow her. But in any case, unpopularity and lack of time, those are the two things we have to discuss right now. Rona, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank our guest, Susan Morrison, who you just heard, editor of the new book, 30 Ways of Looking at Hillary, and two of her contributors, Dahlia Lithwick, who wrote the essay, Can You Forgive Her?, senior legal correspondent and senior editor at the online magazine Slate.com, and Robin Givhan, the Pulitzer Prize-winning fashion reviewer for the Washington Post, and they joined us from our bureau in New York. Thanks to you all very much. Joe Palca will be here as a guest host tomorrow. We'll see you again on Monday. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.